The best is yet to come. It's wonderful to remember. You got to remember that. We have to remember that, especially in the light of what seems to be going on this planet right now. I guess it's inevitable that with the Russian-Ukraine thing issue going on, the evangelical online chatter has really bumped up a bit about the final days. Anytime Russia sneezes, oh, it's the final days. Russia sneezed. Things are happening. You know, they always refer to the book of Ezekiel, Ezekiel 38, equating Russia with the great empire looking to destroy Israel. They bring up that one. They bring up the book of Daniel that has a number of animals in it, and Russia's always the bear. Now, they take it literally until they don't want to take it literally, and then they say, oh, Russia's the bear, and America's the eagle. So they begin to do some kind of metaphysical interpretation of their own. Or Revelation 13, where the great beast, all these animals come into one great beast in Revelation. And then depending on the day, it's either Russia or gay people or women or Democrats or. Like, ooh. So the evangelicals are based in a lot of fear right now when they look at the planet. Well, when they look at the planet, they feel a lot of fear in general. So they're always pointed to places in the Bible that really had nothing to do with today, but had to do with an immediate need that the Israelites had all those years ago. But this goes on almost every other week. If you look at the evangelical blogs and you look at what they're saying online, I try to keep up a little bit. Sometimes it's quite amusing to me. So I wanted to share with you a little bit of what I found at the turn of the century in the year 2000. They were really kicking up a storm. Oh my God, Jesus is coming back. It's year 2000. He's coming back to celebrate his birthday. 2,000 years old. Have you heard of the Weekly World News? Scott has. You're waiting in line at the supermarket, and there's a long line, so you grab one of these newspapers, and you begin reading. Well, I took one and a very long line one day, and it was their commemorative millennium countdown issue. And they had wonderful articles, like how to guarantee your place in heaven in 12 easy steps. Another 12-step program, terrific, okay, there you go. How to find your loved ones in the afterlife. Because apparently heaven's like New York and you don't know where to begin. So you have your weekly world news to help you find them. And my favorite, proper etiquette for meeting Jesus during the second coming. This is full of really helpful advice. I want to share a little bit with you because I know you come here for these things. According to the author, Reverend Pythe, I believe is how you pronounce it. He wrote a book on it, and they shared excerpts from the book. If you happen to meet Jesus in person, I don't see anybody taking notes here. Okay. If you happen to meet him in person, there are things you do. First of all, when you meet him, bowing is fine. But don't prostrate yourself, because it takes too long to get up unless you're very fit. And he has a lot of people to meet. So just bow. We're told a simple handshake is fine, but, quote, don't try too hard to impress Jesus with how manly your grip is. Because squeezing his palms could irritate his crucifixion wounds. Shouldn't he be healed by that by now? It's been 2,000 years. You think they would have closed it? Number two, you may invite him to dinner, but make sure it's kosher. Number three, don't try to correct his table manners, because there were no utensils in Palestine back then. Just let him watch you, and he'll pick it up. This is in this book. I'm not making this up. It was in the book. It's okay to make a joke during dinner, according to the good reverend, but it would be a good idea if you keep it clean. Oh. He said, remind yourself that Judgment Day is coming and you want to stay on his good side. Naturally. And if he makes a joke, don't feel compelled to laugh at it, because Jesus can always tell a phony. I'm sure he can. Now, of course, these are laughable. Hopefully, we laugh at them. But it's astonishing to think how many people who buy this magazine, believe these to be true. The other day, I heard that over 60% of Americans believe that Noah's Ark was a true story. Over 60% of fellow Americans believe that the ark really happened, that he put one of each animal ever on the planet on this boat. That people are really fearful, that the religious right, the evangelicals, the fundamentalists are really fearful because their religious leaders are scaring them over and over and over again to get them to come back, to make sure they have them under control and to tell them what to do to save themselves from the coming destruction. But even the Bible itself, if you really look at it, says nobody knows when the end time will come. No one can say when Judgment Day will be. So why do we have the continued interest or obsession, if you will, with the final days, with Judgment Day, with the second coming? For some Christian Orthodox believers, it helps them to make sense, at least in their own minds, that the seeming out-of-control planet we live on there is some control that they can take to make sure that they're going to be okay, even if nobody else is. Yes, in a way, that magazine that I was reading is right. The final days are coming, but not in the way they meant. Remember, the Bible always refers to your personal journey. The Bible was written to make sense out of what and who this God was. So in the beginning, we have God walking around the garden, and at the very end, we have God is love. So we have the progression of human thought as to what our Creator really is. So the journey that the Bible is talking about is your personal journey. It doesn't make sense to take it politically or worldly or literally. It just doesn't make sense. It's like trying to say that the library that you go to has one point of view. Of course it doesn't. And the Bible doesn't have one point. It has many points of view depending on who the writer is. The final days, metaphysically, are the days that we finally make the determination to be joyful and happy. That's what the final days means. When you finally determine and know that you're one with God and that you can have a happy life, then you have arrived at the final days, not of your time here on the planet, but finally knowing you deserve good. The final days are when we literally say enough. No more lack, limitation, fear, complaining, criticism, or putting off the power of God for my success. We came here with a divine plan. We came here for a definite reason. You were not plunked here. You were not put here against your own will. You chose to come to this planet to use your divine power to create good, to create joy, not only for yourself, but for other people. We're here to serve and to lift each other up. The Judgment Day, metaphysically, is the day that I decide and judge myself worthy to be called divine, to know that I am one with God. To judge myself as worthy of all good. The Judgment Day is the day I remember that I was created perfect, whole, awesome, powerful, joyful, prosperous, and eternally one with God. A being of love who was never born, we took these human shapes for however long we decide to be here. And we will never die because we are eternal beings of spirit. We will leave the body aside one day when we're finished with it. But you were never born and you will never die as a spiritual being. Your body may wear out after 100 years or so. The brain may get a little fuzzy about details, as we've discovered once in a while. You ever look for your glasses there on your head? Or worse, in your hands. But I have them here somewhere. And to remember the truth, I am eternal. You are eternal. You have been alive for eons, for billions and billions of years. And will continue to be so in spirit. So knowing this to be the truth, that we are children of God, eternal beings of light, love, power, and joy, how can we move from this fear-based living into fearless living? How can I really grab the joy and the happiness that I was brought here to the planet by my own divine plan for? How can I really embrace everything that Spirit has for me? I think that by acknowledging that certainly we are spiritual beings having a human experience, and although we do live in an absolute spiritual realm where all is perfect in God all the time, we are experiencing in a three-dimensional relative realm right now called planet Earth. So we are limited in some ways by this form we have chosen to take. The realm of an evolving planet involves duality. Because you have a separate body, we automatically see two, me and you. This and outside, good and bad, black and white, negative and positive, division and oneness. In the Bible, it's called partaking of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Remember, Adam and Eve were walking around in paradise having a grand time, and then the snake representing the ego says, if you eat of this tree of duality, of seeing two, you're going to be just like God and have God's power. And as soon as they did, paradise was gone. They saw that they were naked. They began covering up. They began arguing. And soon they left. Now, the mystics say that Adam and Eve were not kicked out of the garden, that they left to go on a journey. Because we can only really appreciate and love paradise, heaven if you will, by going away and seeing the truth of it. By having a divine detachment to step back and to see the wonderful good that we do have. So seeing duality helps us to actually see the power of our oneness. We could consider living here on planet Earth as akin to going to the theater, if you will. When we enter into the world of a theater, you take a seat, you have the story unfolding on the stage in front of you, we are agreeing upon a limited form of reality for a couple of hours, the purpose of focusing ourselves on a certain experience we call the play or the movie, which is the lesson or the message that the author has for us. Now, certainly the actors and the audience are aware that what is transpiring is not ultimately real, that they're not going through that. They do it eight times a week, that they've been rehearsing and they are doing the story for us. But the agreement of what is going on makes it appear as real. Actors know that even if you're reciting somebody else's lines, those are your lines. You're owning those lines, those words, for 2 or 3 hours. Now, some of the public doesn't really get that the actor doesn't write their own stuff. It's really quite amazing. Sally Kemp, our dear Sally, who has moved to California, told me when she played Nurse Ratched in the San Francisco production of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And she said people would back away from her when they saw her on the street. They would leave the building when she walked in. She said it was the strangest thing. She said even friends who came to see her would look at her and say, I don't think I know you. You couldn't possibly act that good. There has to be something of that in you. She said, I love doing the show and I couldn't wait to stop doing it because it was so heavy a burden to do such a good job, I guess, that people were saying, this has to be you. It's kind of frightening in a way. Actors have been hooked up actually to sensory machines, and it's been proven that what actors are experiencing are real emotions. that they are going through the emotions. That's what makes an actor a good actor. The body's reacting the same as if you were actually doing that at the moment. As an audience member, how involved have we become during what's unfolding on stage or in a film? We've been on the edge of our seats during a thriller, we've been weeping at tearjerkers, and we've been happy and laughing at comedies. There was a woman years ago when I was doing a show. She waited till after the show. Her family had gone on and was waiting for her in the parking lot. But she had to tell me what had happened during the show. She said, my husband has been in the hospital. I shared the story with you before, but it's been a while. She said he was in the hospital. He had five back operations for 10 years. He has been in constant pain, and he's been miserable. She said he was released from the hospital today, and we decided to celebrate by coming to this show. And he laughed at you when you came on stage, and he laughed so hard that he let go of the pain. He said, it was the first time in 10 years he's laughed, and I have to thank you for it. We were both in tears. We were hugging each other. That's the power that we have of releasing these emotions and letting people feel the truth. And that's what we're doing in our lives. As Sarah shared those powerful words from Shakespeare, all the world's a stage, and all men and women are merely players doing our role. The role that we have chosen for this incarnation this time around. We've come to the planet for one reason, to experience the fullness of our spiritual nature as and in these human forms. While having made the soul choice before we arrived here, what we needed to accomplish. How do we know this? Jesus, speaking from his Christ, said to us, I've come that you may have life and life abundantly. So from your own God self, your natural trajectory is toward abundance, toward joy, toward health and wholeness, toward love. And if these are not our lives, then we have been putting it off, and we've been choosing another role, another way of doing it. It's something our souls need to do to continue to expand its true divine nature. So we came here to test ourselves, to see, do I really believe the truth of my divinity? Of course, on the other side, we go, sure, that's a snap. I'll go here. How can I forget who I am? Well, guess what? We came here, and we forgot who we are. We began to believe we were the character that we have chosen. I did a show once with an actor. They just finished doing West Side Story at that theater, and the guy playing Bernardo was fired, and he was actually put into a mental hospital because he believed he was Bernardo. And he was actually beginning to physically fight the other actors on stage. They went, oh, well, I don't get paid enough to fight on stage. I have to sing and dance at the same time. He began to lose reality, and we begin to lose reality of our true spiritual nature when we think we are merely human, when we think this is the role that I have to play in my life. The limitation of the human experience, for whatever reason, is a soul choice. I get to choose the kind of life I want. You're not forced to be here. You chose. You elected to come here. You were not forced by anyone, by spirit, to be here. You said, I've got something to do, and I've got to do it in this time frame. But we forgot it was meant to be a happy and a joyful experience. We also came here with the full realization deep within that I am a child of God, and that gets you up on Sunday morning to come here to remember this truth, that I live in a loving universe, a universe that is ultimately friendly, and God within me has provided me everything that I need or desire to let my joy, to let my life be a joyful one. Now, I am so powerful that I can choose to forget the truth. I can choose to put it aside and to choose drama, to choose to be in that place of misery or unhappiness or limitation. I'm so powerful, I can choose to be not powerful. That's how good of an actor you are. I can choose not to, and I begin to live this scenario of being powerless, You get to choose any role that you want. God will not interfere with your casting decisions. You get that? God will not interfere with your casting decision. I'm casting myself as a poor housewife or an out-of-work actor who no one will hire. Okay. Try it the other way. How about an working actor who gets paid a lot of money? Or a housewife, if you want to continue doing that, who was also creative and joyfully satisfied with life. There is no limitation except the limitation I put on me. So in effect, God is saying, go for it. If being miserable and being a drama queen is something that's fun for you, go for it. I had a better plan for you, but yeah, go choose. Whatever you want to do, thy will be done. Carlos told me once he had a meditation and he was really unclear about something in his life. He said, God, thy will be done. And he heard God clearly say, no, thy will be done. What do you want? Choose. If you don't want to enjoy the experience, I'm not going to force you to enjoy it, Spirit is saying to us. You chose the role you're in now. I chose it. So I can pretend, again, to be not whole, to be not prosperous, to be not worthy of a good relationship. I can choose to be a New Yorker who cannot find a mate here in town. Ugh, that's such a tired role. It's been done. Choose another one. I can choose to be an old, bitter person. Say, oh, guess I'm old. Gosh, I'm 60, now I have to be old. Or I can be a happy silver fox. Which role do you choose? What was it, Joan Collins, when she was like 55, posed for Playboy? And Gloria Swanson in Sunset Boulevard was 50 when she was old and demented. It's a role. Joan Collins chose another role. The truth is, eventually, every child of God has had to get and accept the reality of this divine self, which is, I am one with God. And in my oneness, there's nothing lacking within me. There's no power lacking just because you're older. I mentioned Grandma Moses a couple of weeks ago. She was 100 when she started painting. After 100, she had a good quarter of her work was done. She changed because she couldn't embroider anymore, so she said, I'm not going to not be creative. What new role am I going to choose for myself? Nothing is impossible for God, but God is not going to force you to be happy. This is what we mean by the fall of humankind. We fall when we choose a role as a weak human. We didn't fall into sin. You're not a sinner. There are no sinners who are children of God. You are a blessing. You're a divine blessing. You always have been, no matter what you've done. We don't fall into sin. We fall asleep. We fall asleep to our good. We have not set the alarm to get up and say, oh, my good is waiting for me. Our goal is to wake up from a belief of lack, limitation, suffering, existential loneliness, and death, which again is just a transition from the body form. Your soul, when it knows it's time to move on from here, will vibrate faster and just go home like that. No big deal. So it's a transition that we humans freak out about. But essentially, our souls go, okay, time to take off this old space suit and move on to another good. As a minister, it's so gratifying and so exciting to see us heal from the illusion that we're not powerful, that we don't have good, that I can't be happy. During our Sundays together and during one-on-one counseling or classes and retreats, it's so wonderful to see over and over again a little light go on. It's like, oh, right, a little piece of the puzzle comes together. I am one with God. That's the truth of who I am. I am a spiritual being, a powerful, wonderful, happy spiritual being who can choose another life, another way of doing it. I taught a class a while ago on the prosperity secrets of the Ten Commandments, and we were talking about not bearing false witness against our neighbor. And I asked everybody, what falsehoods were held against you as a child? I want you to think about that for a minute. What was told about you over and over again when you were a kid that you began to believe that there was a character that was assigned to you? And do you still continue to believe it? Well, apparently a lot of people in this class did because there was so much emotion that came up when they talked about it. Some people said that they were not considered beautiful because of their skin color or because of their hair being curly or how they looked or how they weighed or the shape of their noses. Others were threatened with violence if they stepped out of line as a child, and they never really were sure what that meant until it happened. Some were blamed for the breakup of their parents' marriage, even though they were only babies at the time of the divorce, and they believed up to that point that they were at fault somehow. In her book, Return to Love, Marianne Williamson wrote about the baby boomers, and she said, what happened is that we never grew up. The problem isn't that we were lost or apathetic or materialistic. The problem is we're terrified. Our fear is free-floating. We're afraid that this isn't the right relationship, or we're afraid that it is. We're afraid of failure, or we're also afraid of success. We're afraid of dying young, or we're afraid of dying old. We're more afraid of life than we are of death. So we have created all sorts of monsters to be afraid of in our lives. We have let this fear become our reality. Our consciousness is pervaded by an unfriendly, vicious world that appears to be getting worse every day. So what's really happening is we rapidly move toward the year 2020. Can you believe it's only like 5 years and something? 2020 sounds like a science fiction novel, doesn't it? So did 2000. So did 1984. But as we move forward, we keep saying, there's so much rapid advancement going on this planet. But what we're seeing also is a healing of our planet. Sometimes it's 2 steps forward, one forward, 2 back, 1 forward. But there is a healing that goes on as we are all opening our consciousness to the truth of God. Equilibrium and balance is always trying to reestablish itself on this planet. The number one rule of the universe, Charles Fillmore, co-founder of Unity, said, is divine order. The universe is always looking to restore divine order and balance, always. That's the number one rule of our lives as well. So even if it appears the situation in Ukraine or Venezuela or Uganda or anywhere on the planet, in our country, or in our personal lives seems headed for a complete breakdown, we can hold in the light of truth that healing is our job as truth students. So not only do we know that we are whole, but we have to know our planet and every other child of God is whole as well. And that's the way we lift our planet up, that we bring to this wonderful home that we are in right now love, peace, and balance, so that all of us can prosper and live a happy life. Silent Unity once received a letter from a woman whose daughter had an advanced case of cancer. The doctor told her, sorry, there's nothing we can do. It's too late to operate, and there are other complications as well. So go home and prepare yourself for not being here in a few months. Her mother was a Unity Truth student, and she told her daughter, look, you don't have to die. You don't have to, no matter what they tell you, so don't give up. She says, my friends at Unity are praying for you, praying with you, and we're going to pray together and remember the truth of God's wholeness within you and for you. It took a while before the daughter could let go of the idea of having to die, but within a few hours of that chat with her mother, she began to feel calmer, more at peace, and her mother actually felt this sense of change going on within her. 3 days later, the doctor decided to operate on her, since she appeared to be a bit stronger. After the operation, the doctor visited the daughter and says, I don't pretend to know what happened. You had a cancerous condition of the lower intestines. The x-rays showed there was the mass. During the surgery, my associate and I looked over every inch of your intestines carefully. We found no cancer. No inflammation, not even irritation. I'm amazed. It's truly a miracle. The mother and her friends at Unity were not surprised. Healing happens. Healing is your right as a child of God. Regardless of what the world would have you believe, regardless of what the medical profession would have you believe, they're doing their work, they're doing what they know. We bless them. We're so grateful for their work and for the advancement, but we know there's another step. There's another dimension to this healing work. One of my favorite spiritual teachers, White Eagle, said, "Have courage, for so many depend on you. They depend on your thoughts, your attitudes. People are looking to you and unconsciously recognizing in you a light. You are privileged to help lead others to the light of God." That's really powerful. When you know the truth, when you have an inkling of truth, you will then begin to attract people to you because they recognize in you the truth of God. But we have to get clearer. To be a clear channel, we have to allow the light of God. Jesus said, "You are the light of the world." He was not paying you a compliment. He was telling you the truth. And we have to become bearers of this divine light as our planet is moving into a new healing phase, into a new consciousness, though the ride has been bumpy and may be bumpy once in a while. No matter what you may be experiencing right now in your life, turn it over to the power of God inside of you and say, "God, you're at work here. I choose another role. Today I'm a powerful child of God." And I remember that and I play that part to the hilt. As I begin to know and to inhabit and believe this role, other people will see it as well and respond as you are putting that out there. Make this your day of judging yourself and your life as holy, as powerful, as successful, and good. Know that God is here, that God is at work, and with God, nothing is impossible. Nothing is impossible for God within you. As Jesus said, don't fear, just believe. So take a breath, close your eyes, go to your heart. Take on that new role. Leave that old, tired, weak role aside. Take on a new thought, a new idea. You are powerful. I am powerful. Together, I am powerful. Breathe that in. I am the light of the world. I am the light of the world. Let that take hold. God and I are one. God and I are one. Breathe deeply. Let go of any stress, any strain, any belief to the contrary. You're as powerful as the most powerful person who's ever lived. There is no less power. And no more power. You have the fullness of God within you right now. Breathe in. And as we enter into our meditation time, we do so with our beautiful meditation song. I am so blessed for all that I have, all that I am, and all that God is. Let go and allow Spirit to reveal the truth to your heart, to your soul, to your mind right now.
For all that I am,
I am so blessed.
breathe into your heart. Center yourself on the love, the light, the peace, the good of God. It isn't something that we have to create. It's something that is who we are. So simply allowing the power of Spirit to take its rightful place in the forefront of our consciousness and the awareness of who and what we are. Powerful, beautiful, perfect, whole Spirit beings. Here with a divine purpose to remember the truth, remember the power, to have a happy, joyful life and to share that joy with others. There's something astonishing when we allow that truth to take hold. We may begin to feel tears come forth, or real excitement in our souls and our hearts about the reality of who we are. It seems and it hears and it feels right. It is right. It's natural. It's real. You are a powerful child of God who deserves all the good that God has and is. So I invite you to breathe into your body temple and to direct energy to any part that may be hurting, that may be in pain, that may be diseased. You, as a child of God, have the right to call forth healing in your mind and in your body temple. Quietly affirm to your whole being, I am healed and strong. I am healed and strong. Let that take hold. From the top of your head down to your toes, I am healed and strong. Children of God are also successful at what they do. Spirit is always leading us to know the truth. And by being in the divine flow of good, our success is assured. So I quietly affirm in my heart, I am successful in all I do. I have all I need for a happy life. Breathe that truth deep into every atom and molecule of your being. I am successful in all I do. I have all I need for a happy life. Let that take hold. I am the light of the world. This is the truth. Your job is to know the truth, to embrace the light, and to let that light shine forth so others may heal as well. We quietly, silently affirm the truth in our souls. God is the light on my path. I know what to do, and I do it joyfully and gratefully. God is the light on my path. I know what to do, and I do it joyfully and gratefully. Breathe that in. And for a few moments in the silence of your being, we allow Spirit to reveal the truth. We let go of the words, and we allow God to reveal, I am here. And I am at work. A moment spent with God in the silence is worth 1,000 pages of scripture, because God is revealing the truth to our hearts. Take a deep breath. Feel the light, feel the power, feel the joy. Let go and let God do the work. There is only one power, one presence, God the good. And so it is.